Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. A big hello to our listeners around the world from Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, across North America. We've got a great guest with us tonight with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Department of Fisheries. Our old buddy, Benny Williams, will be with us, and we're going to talk fishing because everybody, it's spring finally here in the Midwest, and the flowers are blooming, the mushrooms are popping up out of the ground, and we're very excited. My co-host tonight from the fine state of Virginia, and also manning the controls, keeping us on the air on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio, Billy Willard. Good evening, Billy.
Well, good evening to you, Larry. Good to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, too. It's been a very exciting week here at the Animal Compound as we await spring and the alligators are ready to come out. And oh, my gosh, we're so excited with the spring weather. How's the weather in Virginia?
Oh, man, it's just great. It was about 70 degrees today. A little bit of wind, but, you know, with 70 degrees, I'll take a little bit of wind.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, that little bit of wind drives out all that rain we had about a few days ago. So,
well, we're supposed to have possibly a little bit of that tomorrow, but not 30% chance I can deal with that. But come Sunday, we're supposed to be 80-some degrees.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait. Oh, my Lord, Benny's going to be so excited talking fishing with us tonight, man, because everybody has such spring fever. And we want to tell everyone this. Oh, my. This part of Wild World is brought to you by Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. Fantastic video on demand available for just $4.99, over 6 hours of information about Bigfoot. With such experts, and I use that term loosely, as Melissa Hovey, Steve Coles, our good friend Billy Willard, Bob Gimlin, yours truly. Go to the website, ChautauquaLakeBigfoot.com, $4.99, and 6 hours of video if you're a fan of the Discovery Channel, things like Not Finding Bigfoot and Monsters and Mysteries. You'll thoroughly enjoy this, and it's quite a deal Peter Weimer's put on together up there from Mayville, New York. They all make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day is not with us tonight. I'm subbing in. Gosh, what a responsibility this is going to be, as he's overseeing his sick cat. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah, it's apparently throwing up in the corner of the house. So it's all tumultuous at the Dr. Day house. And hopefully I can be a worthy substitute for Dr. Day for the Wild World News. You know, they tell us 1 in 3 fish imported into the U.S. may be illegal. Did you know that, Benny?
Oh, absolutely. And thank goodness the federal government has made major strides in the last 10 years in terms of checking the source of our seafood as well as testing our seafood to make sure that it's safe to eat.
That's the voice of Benny Williams with the Department of Fisheries, and he would know. In fact, a new study says 22% to 32% of wild-caught imported seafood comes from, get this, pirate fishing around the world.
Wow. Yes, indeed. That's very, very unfortunate, but that is the fact. And a lot of folks don't realize how difficult it is to trace seafood on its route over here to U.S. markets. And I would advise all listeners that if you do commercially purchase seafood, make sure that the person behind the counter is knowledgeable and can tell you what species of fish is in the display counter in front of you, as well as where its country of origin is. Two things to always remember.
Wow. Well, we will, Benny. It seems that Belgium crushes its elephant ivory as Europe takes a harder look at wildlife trafficking. Belgium's ivory crush outside Brussels comes the day before the EU conference on measures to reduce wildlife trafficking, and that's great news. The European countries are starting to support some of our endangered species, and, of course, I think they said that 50 to 75 elephants are killed every day in Africa, which
that's
is
a lot.
Just sad. Yeah, that's tough.
The Gulf oil spill not over. Dolphins, turtles dying in record numbers 4 years after the biggest oil spill in the U.S. history. The Gulf of Mexico's wildlife species are still struggling to recover, according to a news report that has been released today, according to the National Geographic Society. That's going to happen for many years to come, isn't it, Benny?
Yes, and when it comes to the breakdown of different oil products, depending on the water temperature and the type of oil, it can be quite a long time before things get back to normal.
You know, oh, here's one for us. A new study reveals how alcohol affects the brain chemistry of pair-bonding prairie voles. In other words, they're feeding alcohol to prairie voles. They don't even do that in Virginia, do they, Billy?
No.
Two prairie voles walk into a bar that scientists study alcohol effects on couples bonding. I'm telling you. You know, they talk Viagra. I'm telling you, just get a six-pack of beer, man.
That'll put you in the mood.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, with all the war that's been going on in Afghanistan, Afghanistan's got a huge new national park. Whakum National Park protects mountains, snow leopards, which is very good, and traditional ways of life. And you would think with all the warfare over there that the last thing they would try to put together is a national park, but it seems they've done so. And that's a pretty spectacular country. Now, have you ever been to Afghanistan, Billy?
I have not.
Benny?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. No,
but in terms of mountains, rural beauty, I hear it's breathtaking, a very ancient area on planet Earth,
yeah,
both from a cultural as well as geological standpoint.
Researchers explain how crows solve the challenge from Aesop's fables. In a new study, crows solve the challenge from Aesop's fables, showing scientists exactly how their minds work. And, you know, crows are highly intelligent. We have one that's here at the compound that broke his wing. We call him Walker because he has to walk everywhere. But it's amazing how this crow has taken this challenge that he has, his physical disability, and he's just as perky and doing just as well as the crows that have it. You know, it's amazing how animals will step forward and do just incredible things, even with a disability like not being able to fly. So that doesn't surprise me at all. Rescue dogs tested by Washington mudslide recovery, question and answers with a handler. And, of course, on March 22nd, a mudslide in Oslo, Washington, sniffer dogs' efforts to find victims are hampered by packed mud, rushing water, and poor weather. I can't even imagine that mess. Just, my God. I don't see how they would ever just Kenyan president or priest talks about his commitment to saving wildlife, which is always great. And of course, we just had the announcement of the extinction of the western black rhinoceros, no longer in the wild. They're completely gone, which is sad. While the world's last Sumatran rhinos dies at the Cincinnati Zoo, the death of Suchi 10 is a devastating blow to a rapidly dwindling species, according to zoo officials. In fact, I believe the Sumatran rhino became extinct in Vietnam just not too long ago, so it's sad news.
Yeah, it is.
Here we go, Benny. Too many salmon in the sea, Pacific study hints. Fueled by rising sea temperatures, pink salmon have become too abundant for the good of other marine life and need to be scaled back, a seabird study argues. So what's about that, Benny?
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could have too much salmon. I was in Alaska for 6 years, and my goodness. I loved all five species. But, you know, it's interesting when it comes to global climate change. There's looking at salmon. They're looking at squid. That's another species that they think will increase in number as waters, temperature of the waters begin to rise. So that's just one of the many ramifications of global climate change. And
yeah.
Lord knows what type of ripple effects it can have throughout the rest of the marine habitat.
And, you know, I had a good point made. You know, we've had this horrendous winter. The person that addressed this, you know, because everyone says, you know, they're talking about global warming, and we had this brutal winter with all the cold weather and the polar vortex and all that. So what's different? He says climate is different than weather. Weather's just from year to year. Climate is something that occurs over a period of time, like thousands of years. So it's you can't really put them into the same category.
Well, right. We're seeing global climate change, but when you go to the geological time scale, you know, you're talking, say, if you want to look at ice ages, hundreds of thousands of years. But yet, still, when you force the fulcrum point, on the short term, very quickly, the results can be catastrophic on a global scale. And what we have to be so careful is now, in geological time, we're talking about a rise in temperature more than several degrees in less than 20 years. The previous geological epochs were in flux in hundreds of thousands of years. So that's something to really think about over the short term.
Yeah. This climate change has been going on for a long, long, long time. It's part of the evolution of the Earth, and it's just getting sped along by such things as toxins that we put in our air and that sort of thing. So,
well, you know, a decrease in the ozone layer, and perfect example, another species, the polar bear.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, no Arctic ice, pack ice. Less pack ice, then that's less habitat for them to hunt and survive, and they will be face to fate of some of these modern-day rhinoceri that we just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because their habitat will be gone.
Yeah. Good news from Japan. They're halting whaling programs in response to international court rules. Man, that is just fantastic. The United Nations court ruled that Japan's programs to take whales in the Southern Ocean is not for scientific purposes and must be stopped. So, and it looks like that Japan is going to act, because they have been the worst as far as this whaling going on. And it's just sad. In fact, we've got a video on our Larry the Animal Guy and Friends about these folks that rescued a whale that was caught in a net. And it's the most incredible video because here's this whale all tangled up and these guys on this little bitty boat, and that whale just stays right there with the boat and basically lets them cut it off. And it's, I believe it was a right whale. And then the next thing you see is after they get all the netting off, it goes way out in the ocean and starts doing these incredible dives in the ocean. It's just amazing. It's kind of like he said, hey, thanks a lot, man. That was awful nice of you to do so. So it's pretty incredible. Now, here's something. 10 stray dogs from Sochi arrived in the U.S. for adoption from Russia after the Olympics. 10 dogs rescued from the streets of Sochi, Russia, arrived at Washington, D.C. Animal Rescue League Thursday evening on their way to new homes in the U.S. Now, that's fantastic, but gosh, Billy, we have plenty of dogs already here that need homes.
Now they're going to start sending cats. Better watch out.
What are they going to send us?
I mean, we're overrun with cats out here. I tell you, it's it's amazing how many litters these cats can have. I mean, before you know it, man, it's like a flood out here.
Well, and two, you know, cats are so bad on songbirds and just in general. I mean, they're an environmental disaster. We have no cats here at the compound except ones that weigh between 400 and 600 pounds. Because I have a large black dog that just simply does not like.
That's a big tabby.
It is a big tabby. And my St. Bernard black lab cross, he just simply does not tolerate stray cats on the property. So usually when he makes his little patrol at night, I'm thinking, cats, run for your lives, because
he'll get them.
Yeah, he'll get them. Yeah, he will, and along with the raccoons and possums he hates as well. Well, here's news. No real animals aboard Hollywood's Noah's Ark, the new movie out. No live lions or tigers or bears appear in Darren Aronofsky's epic film Noah for reasons both political and practical. In other words, they're all computer-generated. Nothing's real.
Yep.
Yeah, well, we kind of figured that. There was a movie, I can't even, was it Narnia? What was the name of that movie where they had the tiger in it that did all these amazing things?
Yes.
I can't
think of it. Prince Narnia.
Oh,
what was
God.
The name of it?
This is getting old. The brain fades are terrible.
We're all having our senior moments.
Oh, we are. And it's like...
Now, if it was some old movie like Wizard of Oz, we could pop out right out.
Oh, yeah. That's what now those were movies, I'm telling
right.
you. Now, that's a film. I mean, some of this stuff, I have to confess, and this has nothing to do with wildlife or animals or wild world, but I haven't been to a movie since I can remember when. I see nothing on there that tells me I want to spend $50 and spend 2 hours of my life to sit down and watch. But and I feel so bad.
Is the $50 on the tickets or the popcorn?
No, that's probably on the popcorn. Tickets are probably only $20.
Oh God! I feel so bad because when the Oscars come along and they go, I haven't seen none of those movies. So I'm just
well, actually most of them that come up on the Oscars, I've never even heard of them.
Nor the actors. That's what's terrible.
I know.
Oh, my gosh, man. Just think how much we'd damage their ego if they're listening tonight. It wouldn't be pretty. Military dolphins and sea lions, what do they do and who uses them? Well, we know that dolphins and sea lions have been used for all advanced technology. Nothing beats the ability of a bottlenose dolphin and sea lions to find things in the ocean. And the military has been using them for years. I have a good friend in San Diego who worked at the U.S. Navy, and he was telling me some pretty amazing stories about the sea lions that the Navy uses for various secret missions, so we'll call that. Killing healthy zoo animals is wrong, and the public agrees. Well, duh. Recent deaths of four zoo lions and a giraffe. Did you hear this story, Benny?
No.
This occurred in Europe, and darn Dr. David could tell us the city, but they actually killed a giraffe that they had in their collection and fed it to the lions in front of the public. Yeah. And as I was mentioning, on the open animal market, that giraffe is worth about $40,000 to licensed dealers and other zoos, and that is just an atrocity. So that's the big headline. Killing healthy zoo animals is wrong. The public agrees. Well, duh.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm speechless. I'm without words. And you know, Larry, there's very few times I'm without words, but when you just told me about that story, my mouth just hit the ground. I was like, wow.
You should have seen the pictures that were on the internet. You talk about brutal. Oh, my God. With all the children watching it happen, so it's like, Hey, kids, all deer aren't like Bambi. A new study says that children learn facts about animals better from realistic books than from books that give the animals human-like behavior. So, yeah, I wonder how much was spent on that study. But we'll see. And here we were just
Well,
talking
I do
about,
know one thing.
What's that?
An additional ramification of that is that when it comes to looking at all the fish and wildlife,
mm-hmm.
there's some wildlife that because they have fur or feathers that they're warm and fuzzy, and they get a lot of advocates on their behalf. This is a very sore point with myself, a fish mm-hmm. biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who doesn't have the advantage of consumers coming to support the conservation of America's aquatic and fishery resources because they can't hold them in their hand, pet them, or have them as a pet in a cage. It's sort of like out of sight, out of mind syndrome, I call it. And so all animals are important when it comes to the ecology and the indigenous habitats of the United States.
Oh, I know. I've always said snakes have a terrible public relations department. And tarantulas.
And look how important they are in terms of maintaining the numbers of rodents.
Oh, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
If we did not have snakes, we would be overrun by rodents.
I
live here in D.C. across from Rock Creek Park, and the deer population is terrible.
Yep.
To the point where my mom's almost ready to be a card-carrying member of the NRA because of the way the deer come over and they eat all of her plants,
yep.
her flowers. We can't have a vegetable garden. I myself, if you can imagine a 6'4", 350-pound man on the top terrace shooing the deer out of his yard because they're just laying poop nuggets everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And here we are in an urban area, and they are a pest. The damage they cause each year is in the millions of dollars. You know, per state, it's probably in the billions of dollars nationwide. But people are warm and fuzzy with the Bambi deer and the beautiful geese, which some geese, I might add, are terrible destroyers of submerged aquatic vegetation, which is a very important type of fish habitat. So I hope that we can, in the future, educate our public a little bit more about all of the fish and wildlife and how it's all important. I hope you agree.
Oh, I certainly do, and I'm sure Billy does.
Yeah, I'm not too far from you, Benny. I'm down here in Manassas. I don't know if you remember. I don't know. It's probably been a year or two ago. The deer population is so terrible in Fairfax County that there was a lady that was driving down one of the roads in McLean, and the deer jumped across and went right into her windshield, killed her.
Well,
I mean, they're just,
oh my
they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Oh, I've
Well, here's a funny urban deer story. I have pulled up in my driveway at 1:30 at night with five deer on my yard and get out the car, and they don't even move, and they look at me and say, and?
They say, well, there's Benny Williams. Look at him.
And?
Yeah.
He's not even scared.
He's about the largest person I've ever seen.
No, they're not. They're not.
You know, don't even move, babe. Don't even spook you. Like, you know, this is my yard. You know. Oh, it's that bad. And the thing that's going to be interesting is when this kid comes down with Lyme disease and dies, because all it takes is one summer of high heat and a tick explosion that's going to happen, then there's going to be a change of heart. But this is a real problem that I'm sure most states deal with it in temperate regions, and we really got to work on it.
Yeah.
Especially in federal areas, you know, I'd hope and state areas that they would, in terms of managing, you know, would promote very specific short-term hunts, like doe hunts, mm-hmm. you know, maybe with a bow to decrease the reproducing population, because eventually it'll get so high that you'll see the deer and they're very skinny. They don't have much to eat.
Yep. Yeah. That's right.
Well, Brian Gumbel, I was doing the Today Show, and this has been some many years ago. We were having a conversation. He was talking about deer, and his home was outside of New York City, and he had a good analogy. He just called them big mice.
Yes.
He says they eat everything.
Yes.
And, you know, many years ago I was doing a column in Kokomo, Indiana, a wildlife column, and in one sentence I said, you know, it's too bad there wouldn't be some way, somehow, we could reintroduce the wolf to the wilds of Indiana to reduce the deer population. I might have well said Hitler was a good guy. It was like, oh, my Lord, they got so many.
Well, you forgive them, for they know not what you say there. What's very sad is, once again, if people don't understand how delicate and how long ecological equilibrium evolved to the current point, because it is only with healthy predator populations that the ecology can be maintained. Yeah. You remove those predators, and things are already in kilter and can spiral in a way many people cannot predict. I'll give you a marine example. Ever since they overfished the North Atlantic cod down to almost nothing, they have had a explosion of lobsters. Now, here's where we've been lucky. There is only but so much lobster habitat available. That population goes up and increases, and if you have a blight or a disease, you could suffer almost, 95% wipeout of the entire lobster population.
Wow.
So that's just a one-case scenario on the marine side, where when things get out of kilter, what could possibly happen?
Yeah. It's well, we were talking about climate change. Climate change, this will be a headline, shrink salamanders. Amphibians are responding to warmer, drier conditions, says a new study. And the salamanders, because of the weather conditions, are not getting as big.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder how much was done on that study. I don't know.
Well, I'm curious, but they should do some research in Japan, where in their waters they have the largest salamanders in the world.
Well, yeah, it's Japanese salamanders, in fact. We're going to take a one step. The warmer conditions brought on by climate change have pretty much reduced. Oh, well, they shouldn't have done that to me. They just turned off my animal news from the National Geographic Society.
Did they?
And I get halfway through a sentence, and they decide they don't want me to read that sentence any longer. My God, Benny Williams, what are we going to do? Can I stick the U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
Well, let me just add a side note. When I was chasing those deer in my yard, when I started talking about how I just love deer jerky and that back strap right on along that vertebra be mighty tasty, then and only then did they jump that fence. Because they knew I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, true.
So I forgot to mention that color with you can envision me chasing these 100-pound deer around my backyard. But when I mentioned deer jerky, I said my mouth is watering right now. Boy, they got the hell on out of there.
I want video.
Next time I'll get my mom and we can put it on YouTube. She can do the videotaping. Yes, indeed. Another mention, too, since they cut off the National Geographic, we're mighty excited about spring here in D.C. The cherry blossoms are due to reach peak bloom here in about 4 days. Things are just busting out all over in spring, all around the tidal basin. The tourists are arriving in droves, and it's one very special time here in our nation's capital. I think one of the best times to come visit because it certainly is beautiful. And when those cherry blossoms hit peak time, that's the time for me to go down to Fletcher's Boathouse on the Potomac along the canal, get my fishing license, and get me some chartreuse grubs with about a quarter ounce jig weight, and start fishing for some white perch and some walleye and some largemouth bass.
Oh.
And the striped bass will be spawning pretty soon, along with our other famous Illocid, the American shad, will be working its way up under Key Bridge all the way up to the Tidewater Mark and Chain Bridge, and they're starting their spawning run. So that's all part of the spring scenario here in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Well, Billy, are you a fisherman?
You know, I used to do a lot of fresh creek trout fishing when I was younger. And it's been a long time since I had a pole in my hand. I think the last time I did was when we went out to the Delaware Bay and went fishing for flounder.
Oh, my.
That's actually fun.
And I know, did you catch any weak fish?
I did.
Sea trout, that was another one that was very famous in Delaware Bay.
No, we caught one of the other fellas caught a little small shark. he was getting ready to take it off the line, too, and one of the mates said, "Whoa, no, no, you don't want to do that."
I think that's when you reach for your knife and cut the line.
That's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did.
Our guest tonight, Benny Williams, we're going to be talking lots of fishing tonight because spring is in the air. We're going to take a short break. Play lots of PSAs, Billy, because Larry the Animal Guy has to make a break for the John.
Okay, I'll play them all.
Oh, very good. We'll be right back with
Quick,
Wild
Don't
World.
Keep Mother Nature waiting.
We can on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
It's bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Benny Williams from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Fisheries, fish biologist, and our co-host tonight, Billy Willard. I want to remind everyone that this part of the program is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful, scenic Estes Park, Colorado. We call it God's Country. If you've never had a chance to go to that part of the country, folks, you owe it to do it. You need to do it once in your lifetime. Man, it is absolutely spectacular. And McGregor Mountain Lodge, right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park, is the place to stay. We've had bighorn sheep, elk in our backyard. It's absolutely amazing. Deer Mountain right there, right across the road from you. Of course, opening in June, weather permitting, the largest continuous highway, Trail Ridge Road, as it heads off across the Rockies. And what a great place to start it all. That can be your base camp, McGregor Mountain Lodge. Go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. They do make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest tonight, Benny Williams with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we have to ask you, Benny, how's your dad doing?
He's doing much better, thank you.
Well,
he's getting back in true form. Mm-hmm. Stitches are out. Did a beautiful job. No scar was left.
There we go.
To look at him now, you wouldn't even know he had the little boo-boo.
Well, we missed Benny last week. He had to make an emergency trip to the emergency room, and I can't even comprehend that in Washington, D.C., my gosh.
Well, you know what? I think he's getting me back for when I was little. Because I think
you were
my
little
mom,
at one time?
I believe it or not. I was a preemie. I only weighed 5 pounds. Barely weighed 5 pounds. I was an incubator for a month.
Oh, my Lord.
Before they let me out of the hospital. Can you believe that?
That's unbelievable. I can't believe it. That's unbelievable.
But I think somewhere around the age of 4,
yeah.
I was playing at my house. So at that time, we lived in Ohio, Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I got underneath a bar stool, and a bar hit me in the forehead and cut me on my forehead. And Mom said blood was just spurting out like a geyser.
Oh.
You know, it was like a little fountain, a little red fountain there. And Mom said she knew I was going to be brain dead or crippled or, you know, not being able to move. And they rushed me to the hospital, and I survived. So I think he's getting me back for all the times I scared them and made them rush to the hospital. Now it's his turn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you do such great work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We had such great times as we'd come into Washington, D.C. in the month of June and do the wonderful event where they bring in the inner-city children and they stock one of the reflecting ponds next to the World War II Memorial. And they'd go fishing, and I'd chase them around with snakes and lizards and tarantulas. Billy, it was quite a sight to see those children running.
Oh, yeah. And screaming, I might add. I never had to actually see Larry. All I had to do was listen for the screams. And I knew at what station he was around the pond, because he was breaking out some of those incredible critters of his, some of those Gila monsters or baby crocodiles or tarantulas. You never knew what was coming out of one of those plastic containers. And the kids just loved them. They're never the same after that, I'm telling you. Well, we really missed having you. And I also wanted to thank you again while we're on the radio for that wonderful set of books you signed for us. And it actually was very reflective of the story here in Washington, D.C., of the settlement of our nation's capital, which was actually built on a swamp. And all of that area down there on that mall is basically landfill by man. You know, during colonial times, at one time there were three ports, deep water ports in this area. It was the Port of Alexandria, the Port of Georgetown, and the Port of Bladensburg in Prince George's County in Maryland. And it developed from there. So I just thought it was very ironic that your book perfectly matched the historical context of the building and planning of our nation's capital.
It was all planned. I had that model.
I knew it. You're always one step ahead of me there.
Oh, yeah, right. He's referring to the book Alphabet Swamp, which is available through my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com.
And it comes highly recommended. That book is perfect, especially for America's urban youth. Right now, you know, more than 80% of the U.S. population lives in urban areas. And we're fighting a blight. I mean, a blight of kids getting outdoors, a blight of kids not being able to move around, to exercise, to explore, to experience that sense of wonder when it comes to nature, because they're all plucked in to technology, to video games, to smartphones, to their notebooks. And my biggest metaphor for this current generation. Now, Larry, connect me. I know you had the X's, the Y's, the Millennials. What's this new group called? What's the new generation?
I can't say it on the radio.
Okay. Well, anyway, here's the thing. My greatest metaphor for these last four generations, just think about the perpetual evolution of the wildebeest crossing the great plains of Africa, and those lions, those pack of lions, consistently following them, ready to feed at any moment when they spot any weak animal in that pack of wildebeest. Well, these new generations, the ones that got their head in their phone, they got their head on their notebook, they're not paying attention to where they're walking or how they're driving. Those packs of lions and lionesses, they're always going to take the ones that don't pay attention. And I hope these young people start to pay more attention on where they're going, where they're driving, and of their surroundings. If not, they will be a true casualty of those predators on the edge of the herd.
Well, there was a photograph the other day that was on the Facebook that shows you a bunch of line of youngsters with all their heads in the phone, and it was basically saying the walking dead. I mean, they have no person, and it's kind of irritating to tell you the truth a little bit. I mean, it's dangerous when these youngsters, and heck with the youngsters, I see all ladies on their darn phones when they're trying to drive, so. It's and you know what it's all about, babe, as far as these young people. And we had a terrible thing happen. A 25-year-old man, his wife, they're expecting their first child here in the next few weeks. And he would walk every morning, and basically he would pray and recite his rosary while he walked in the streets of Indianapolis. And gosh, about a week ago, he was gunned down, killed by a 16-year-old kid. 16 years old.
How old?
16.
Oh,
no.
Why?
Reason. They think it may have been robbery, but they're not sure. Within just a few blocks of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And they showed the young man. They found him. They arrested him. It was about a week investigation. And they showed him going off to court, and he's laughing and smiling about the whole thing. And I'm thinking, where are these male mentors for these young people? That is the problem.
Well, it runs a little deeper in my eyes, because I think that when we came to a point in our educational system where we crippled our teachers, where they could not discipline their children and maintain chaos in their and to prevent chaos in their classroom, this is when it began.
You're right.
And so children are no longer fearful. They have no reason to respect their elders because of the new society's opinion on disciplining our children. And so, unfortunately, with many of our young people who have no respect for authority and have no fear, this is what happens the first time they begin to understand authority and the consequences of their actions. It is when they are incarcerated, and that is so very unfortunate. You couple that with the fact that one of the things that I loved, and I'm sure you guys had friends if you weren't, I love scouting. Mm-hmm. That's when I went outdoors. That's when I earned my badges. That's when I went camping. I love scouting. I just had that one horrific trip where the guy that was supposed to bring the toilet paper left the toilet paper at home. That was a very long weekend. But otherwise, my whole experience with scouting was just phenomenal. Something that I really loved. And then the kids don't participate in student government or civic activities. They don't volunteer. They have no sense of civic mindedness. And I think one of the most fortifying ways, I think I would make it mandatory that all kids, you know, by the time they leave high school, at certain times, you know, they got to do, say, each semester, 10 hours of volunteer work at a shelter for the homeless, mm-hmm. or an animal shelter, or at a hospital, or a nursing home with the elderly. Because when people look back at you and they thank you, mm-hmm. or when an animal rubs up against you and thanks you and looks at you, that's one of the most self-fortifying experiences a young person can have. And I think that would really be an offset of this current numbness to violence and lack of respect of authority.
Yes, I totally agree. I mean, we haven't had a chance to mentor. I've mentored a couple of kids over the years. But, you know, the thing about it, animals and that's, well, even in a prison, there was a prison, I can't even think where it was at, where they got the prisoners involved with rehabbing birds of prey.
Yes.
And it was just amazing how these men would respond to that, and how they basically just say mellowed out. I mean, it was like, my God. So that just shows you right there and how important that is. It's just, gosh. So you're going fishing soon, Benny.
Yes, indeed. Matter of fact, I have a bait trip lined up for May 2nd out of Chesapeake Beach. It's spring trophy season for striped bass.
Oh.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, there's some big fish there. I mean, monster fish, absolutely. So that's,
and I also, when it comes to D.C. specifically, when I rode over Chain Bridge today on the way to work, I looked over the side, and the cormorants are there.
Oh, they are.
So what do the cormorants mean? Well, those were birds that love to fish. So if they're down there on those rocks, mm-hmm. those fish are starting to run, baby.
Yep.
My gosh. Well, you need to pick up Billy Willard sometime. He'll go fishing.
Well, we're going to do that. We're going to you get us together, Larry. I think that would be a match made in heaven.
That would be. Of course, while we've got Benny on the line here, Billy, well, let's talk about your big event coming up. We need to plug that. The Creature Weekend.
Oh yeah, Benny might not be into that.
Well, he he is. We've talked about it in the past on the show.
Yeah, we're gonna have. It's also in May. Be May 16th, 17th, and 18th. Having an event mm-hmm. called Creature Weekend, and it's this year. It's all about Bigfoot. And
wow.
We'll have some, some pretty big names coming. We got Dr. Jeff Meldrum, which everybody's heard of, and we got Bill Munns, who was a famous Hollywood costume designer. And let's see, who else we got? John Mayaninsky, which is a hard fellow to get a hold of because he spends most of his life out in the wilderness studying mountain goats. So yeah, we got some. We're gonna have some fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome!
I'll give them all the ticket information.
Well, you go to www.creatureweekend.com. Go on there. There's a tab for tickets. You can buy a golden pass and get a pass and do every activity there's going to be. Saturday night, we're going to have something called the Creature Weekend Experience, where we're going to take folks out, and it's going to be like a competition, and we're going to find out who's the best Bigfoot researcher. So we're going to have an area that's staged with different types of, you know, experiences that and kind of see how many things they pick up on, like what they hear and how far away they think it was and that kind of thing. So, and then on Sunday, we're having a special barbecue where Dr. Meldrum is going to give a small class on his little field guide. He made this new trifold field guide for people to identify different prints and that kind of thing in the woods. So it should be pretty exciting.
Got an idea.
What's that?
Let's get Benny Williams to attend.
Yeah.
And we'll take him out in the woods one night.
Yeah.
So people can track him.
All right.
Yeah, see, that's right. See, I'm always skeptical about Saturday out in the woods. I can go to the barbecue, but I don't want people getting any weird ideas. Seeing me walk through the woods, there'll be like false sightings.
On second thought, I withdraw that idea. That was just a weak moment. I'm telling you. But
I have to wear my cowboy underwear to that event. Lord have mercy.
Well, he's talking about doing one in Virginia down the road there, Benny. So.
Yeah, we will be probably in about, we're going to try to plan it for 2015. We're going to have the Virginia Bigfoot Conference. It'll be the first annual. We'll try to do it every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and Benny might be able to make that one because that'll be basically in your backyard, Benny.
That's it.
Well, like I said, I don't mind attending during the daylight hours.
Oh, God.
Oh, me.
Well, we had a great time.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, you said that with such
enthusiasm.
With such enthusiasm. I'll look forward to that. What a wonderful show tonight, Billy. I told you Benny Williams is just the best guest in the world.
Yep. He had a lot of fun.
Well, I feel so blessed to be surrounded and interacting with people so pure of heart that care about our nation's fish and wildlife resources and have a genuine commitment to educating their communities and making the world a better place. And I thank you both, and God bless both of you.
Well, we appreciate that. We're trying like the Dickens, Benny, and it's always great. One of our best friends of our show, and it's always great when Benny joins us. I'm just so sad that Dr. Day's cat's thrown up in the corner of the house, and he wasn't able to be here tonight. But hopefully things will go well at the veterinarian. My gosh. Next week we will not be on because yours truly has a commitment late into the evening on a Thursday night, so we'll be on the week after. With indie rock legend, so that should be exciting. Benny, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure, Larry, and hope to see you and talk to you soon.
Well, you betcha. And Billy, a wonderful job as always. We appreciate the efforts that you put into our show each week.
All right, thank you.
Oh, and you've been listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night-night.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.